Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we go from Hemingway Zero to Hemingway Hero in just 861 short episodes. Today, oh God, what have I done? I have not opened the page. How are you today? Are you good? I'm hot. That's what I am. Today, we are, there's a good little stall. I would never make a good radio host, would I? Because my padding, that's what they call that in radio, my padding is just bad. I just resort to, how are you? As if you can answer me over this one-way audio medium. Anna Karenina, Part 6, Chapter 7. Levin has some jealousy issues, obviously. But Kitty, deep down, admits there was a moment. And she also deep down likes his jealousy as it makes her feel loved. Bit of a mixed opinion I noticed in the comments on this one. I thought that this chapter was pretty, made it pretty obvious that their relationship is unhealthy, I'm going to say. Like, that's a weird dynamic to have. I'm maybe not going to say their relationship is unhealthy, but that is a weird dynamic to have of, like, your jealousy makes me feel more secure. Already, that's a shaky place to begin with. There's a Ben Folds song. Oh, he's so wise, Ben Folds. but I do like this lyric where he says, if you can't trust, you can't be trusted. And I always thought, there's a little bit of truth in that. And when someone is jealous, it's a trust issue, and it makes me wonder about them as a partner as much as the other person. I Am Norwegian said, I didn't notice that the New Year's podcast didn't go up, but forgetting to actually upload the two-year anniversary podcast is really funny. Yeah, it is. It's so strange as well that, like, you'd think it's such a significant episode, right? The two-year anniversary podcast. It's so significant that you must think, oh, well, something must have happened on that day, New Year's Eve, that caused me to not upload it. But it was literally just a coincidence. I just mustn't have hit submit, and they had an early night. I was asleep before midnight. And, yeah, it could have happened on any other day. It just happened to happen on the two-year anniversary, and the very podcast where I bragged about uploading for 2 years straight without fail. So that's just what is that? It is funny. Vasenka and Varenka look similar, okay? They do. I was getting worried over just how, oh, okay, I can see what's happened here. Sorry, I'm getting confused by this comment. There's a big thing that's all crossed out that I Am Norwegian wrote, but he's stricken it through. And I think you were getting mixed up with Vasenka and Varenka, so you've just gone, oops, I made a mistake, cross that out, and that's your excuse. Vasenka and Varenka look similar, okay. Okay, so let's ignore that. I should have just not read any of that, but I'm stupid. I was getting worried, says I Am Norwegian, over just how jealous Levin was getting over so little. But luckily he and Kitty talked it out and ended up in a better place than when they started. He realized how silly he was being and she, how much he loved her.
Ooh.
Yeah. That's one way to look at it. That is one way to look at it. But here's the thing. People that do these little finicky things or little moments of where they know they're breaking a boundary. Like him being so jealous and so over the top about it is breaking a boundary. Like that's a, you could say it's a sort of show of disrespect of their relationship. Now, on the other hand, if it's warranted, like if there was something to be jealous over, I mean, it's still not cool to act that way, but at least you could say, well, he's angry. He's angry about something, right? But here he's just guessing. It's just guesswork. There's nothing actually happened. He's just kind of making up this thing between his wife and this other character. But then people that do that kind of thing will also be very good at having the apology almost loaded, ready to go. When it gets flipped back on them, they'll be, oh, no, I'm so sorry. I should never act like this. I hate this kind of behavior. That kind of thing. And then her kind of almost thriving on that show of jealousy again says to me insecurity and I don't know. I don't know about this whole like good communication thing. I think talk is, you know, they say talk is cheap. So people that act in bad ways are often able to talk their way out of it. They know exactly what to say at the end of it all. And it kind of seems like that's all that's happened there. You should never talk your way out of having done something which you know was wrong in the first place. That's habitual, and I think we'll probably see him do that a lot. I think we actually have seen him do that more than a few times, where he's acted in a certain way and then been all, oh, no, why am I doing this? Why would I say such a thing? And what's wrong with me? It's not good. It's not good. That's how I see it, at least. Gunnarl said, Levin gained a lot of respect in my eyes in this chapter. At first, I was infuriated with him and his unfounded jealousy toward Veslovsky. He seemed like he was treating Kitty like crap because of his own insecurity. He reminded me of my possessive ex-husband that would grill me after parties about which males I had talked to. But then he turned it all around. He talked it over with Kitty and admitted he was wrong, and I love him for it. That is some serious character growth, especially given his youth and inexperience. Still not convinced. I know it looks good, but people who do these things habitually always make themselves look redeemed at the end of it. It's part of the whole charade. Also, her thriving on it is not good, because then a small part of her will seek it again, right? And so it's a real bad dynamic to have going on. Sluggy said, with three G's, I couldn't help but think of some of the earlier chapters in the book when Anna and Karenin, while I read this chapter, Kitty and Levin are able to communicate with each other in a way that Anna and Karenin never could. This chapter could have easily ended with Levin sulking off and building his irrational jealousy towards Veslovsky further and further, but he is able to communicate his feelings of jealousy to Kitty, and she in turn expresses her feelings about Anna to him. He realizes he is in the wrong, and they move on, their relationship all the stronger for it. Contrast that with Anna and Karenin earlier in the novel, when they both were misinterpreting the actions and feelings of each other and might have resolved their issues by talking about them. They were never able to do so, and the breach in their relationship just continued to widen. Great insight as always, says Simply Productive. Have to admit, I'm pretty proud of Kitty and Levin both. They are learning to communicate openly and honestly. It's really nice to see. See, everyone is on about this open, honest communication, but heartfelt apologies are a very common tool in the toolkit of the insanely jealous, or just in the unhealthy dynamic relationship. I think I'm probably projecting some of my own life kind of experiences onto this, you know, not necessarily from my own relationships, but just, you know, ones that I've seen, friends' relationships, and probably even some of my own. You know, we've all got moments in relationships where people get jealous and people play up that jealousy or try to make each other jealous. High school stuff, really, isn't it? Chapter 8. Bloody Ripper. I'm doing this one a bit early tonight, by the way, because I'm going to go watch a few bands, with my brother. So that should be a bit of fun. Chapter 8 goes something like this. Next day, before the ladies were up, the vehicles, a cart and a small trap, stood at the porch waiting for the sportsmen, and Luska, having long ago made out that they were going shooting, after yelping and jumping about to her heart's content, was sitting in the cart beside the coachman, regarding the doorway whence the sportsmen had not yet emerged, with excitement and with disapproval of the delay. The first to appear was Vasenka Veslovsky in new boots, reaching halfway up his fat thighs, his green blouse girdled with a new cartridge belt smelling of leather, and on his head the Scotch bonnet with the ribbons. He carried a new English gun without a sling. Laska jumped down to him and greeted him by leaping about. In her own way, she asked him how soon the others would come out by it, but receiving no reply, she returned to her post of expectancy and again sat motionless with her head turned sideways and one ear pricked up. At length the door opened noisily and out bounded, spinning round and round in the air, Kruk, Oblonsky's yellow-spotted pointer, Oblonsky's yellow-spotted pointer, followed by Oblonsky himself with a gun in his hand and a cigar in his mouth.
"Quiet, quiet, Crack,"
he said affectionately to the dog, which was throwing its paws up against his stomach and chest and getting them entangled in his game bag. Oblonsky was wearing rawhide shoes, bands of linen wound round his feet instead of socks, a pair of tattered trousers and a short coat. On his head were the ruins of some sort of hat, but his gun was a new type, as neat as a toy, and his game bag and cartridge belt, though much worn, were of the best quality. Vasenka had been ignorant that the stylishness of a real sportsman consists in being dressed in rags, but having one's shooting implements of the very best quality, he realized it now that he saw Oblonsky in his rags, yet shining with his elegant, well-nurtured, cheerful and gentlemanly figure, and resolved to follow his example next time. "Well, and where is our host?" he inquired. "He has a young wife," answered Oblonsky with a smile. "Yes, and such a charming one. He was ready dressed. I expect he has run back to her." Oblonsky was right in this surmise. Levin had run back to his wife. Once more, whether she had forgiven him his foolishness of the previous day, and also to entreat her for heaven's sake to take care of herself, and especially to keep further away from the children, who at any moment might collide with her. Then he had to obtain a repeated assurance that she was not angry with him for going away for 2 days, and also to beg her to be sure next day to send a man on horseback with a note, only a word or two, that he might know that all was well with her. Ooh. It was always painful for Kitty to part from her husband for 2 days, but seeing his animated figure, which seemed particularly large and powerful in high shooting boots and white blouse, and the radiant exhilaration of the sportsman in him, incomprehensible to her, she forgot her own pain in his gladness and parted from him cheerfully. "Sorry, gentlemen," he said, running out onto the porch. "Is the lunch put in? Why is the roan on the right? Well, never mind. Laska, be quiet. Go and lie down. Let them out with the flock," he said, turning to the herdsman, who was waiting for orders about some young sheep. "Sorry, there's another rascal coming." Levin jumped down from the cart where he had already seated himself to meet the carpenter, who was approaching with a sazen measure in his hand. "There, you see, you did not come to the office last night, and now you are detaining me. Well, what is it? Won't you have one more turning made? 3 more steps will be enough. Then we'll get it exact. It will be much more comfortable. You should have obeyed me," said Levin with vexation. "I told you to set up the string boards first and then to make the grooves. You can't alter it now. Do as I tell you and make a new one." The facts of the matter were that in the new wing that was being built, the carpenter had spoilt the staircase, having made it without calculating the elevation, so that when it was put in position, all the steps sloped. Now he wanted to use that staircase, adding 3 steps to it. He will be much better so. But where will it reach to with 3 additional steps? "Excuse me, sir," said the carpenter, smiling contemptuously. "It will reach to the exact spot. It will just stretch from the bottom, you see." He went on with a persuasive gesture, "and go up and up till it gets there." "Why, but 3 steps will add to its length as well. Where will it get to?" "It will go up from the bottom, I mean, and reach the top," the carpenter repeated obstinately and persuasively. "It will reach up to the wall and halfway to the ceiling." "Oh no, excuse me, you see, it will start from the bottom and go up and just reach." Levin pulled out his ramrod and drew the staircase in the dust. "There, you see." "As you please," said the carpenter, his eyes suddenly brightening. Evidently he had at last understood. "It seems we'll have to make another." "Do then, do as I told you," Levin shouted as he climbed into the cart. "Drive on, hold the dogs, Philip." Having left the cares of home and estate behind him, Levin experienced such a strong sense of joy, of the joy of life and anticipation, that he felt disinclined to talk. Besides, he experienced that feeling of concentrated excitement which every sportsman knows when approaching the scene of action. If his mind was occupied with anything now, it was only with questions. Whether they would find anything in the Kolpensky Marsh, how Laska would compare with Kruk, and how he would shoot today. If only I don't disgrace myself before that stranger. If only Oblonsky's shooting does not beat mine, was his thought. Oblonsky shared these feelings and was likewise not talkative. Vasenka Veldovsky alone chatted incessantly and merrily. Now, as he listened to him, Levin felt ashamed of his injustice towards him the day before. Vasenka was really a good sport, simple, kind-hearted, and very jolly. Had Levin come across him when still a bachelor, they would have been intimate. Levin did not quite like his holiday outlook on life and the sort of free and easy stylishness about him. He seemed to lay claim to a lofty and unquestionable importance because he had long nails, a Scotch bonnet, and everything else in keeping, but one could forgive him this for the sake of his good nature and breeding. He attracted Levin by his good education, his splendid accent in French and English, and by the fact that he belonged to Levin's own class. Vasenka greatly admired the Don Step horse attached on the left. One, and often two, of these three horses is loosely harnessed and runs at the side. This is the footnote. He went into raptures over it. How delightful it must be to gallop across the steeps in a steep horse, eh? Don't you think so? He said. He seemed to picture a gallop on a steppe horse as something wild and poetical. Nothing came of it but his naivety in connection with his good looks. Sweet smile and graceful movements was very attractive. Whether it was that Veslovsky's nature was congenial to him or that to expiate his sin of yesterday, he tried to see only what was good in him. Levin liked Veslovsky's company. When they had gone about three versts, Veslovsky suddenly missed his cigars and pocketbook and did not know whether he had lost them or left them on his table. He had 370 rubles in the pocketbook, and therefore the matter could not be ignored. "Do you know, Levin, I will gallop home on this Don side horse. That will be grand, eh?" he said, preparing to get out. "No, why?" replied Levin, conjecturing that Veslovsky must weigh not less than 15 stone. "I will send the coachman." So the coachman rode back on the side horse, and Levin drove the other two himself. Alrighty, there we go, another chapter down. We are going hunting. Fun times. Have your say about that one at the subreddit. Thank you very much for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.